Welcome to another episode of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. 40 Minutes in the Old Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast. Check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. You can just go to 1517.org in general, because still in the great quarantine of 2020, and you might need something to read, something to listen to, something to watch, and all that stuff is sitting over there. So check it out. Just go through the content. If videos are more your speed right now because you're just wanting to get all your senses, you know, or at least two of them engaged, then go over to YouTube, type in 1517. First thing that comes up, subscribe to that YouTube channel. We're producing a lot of extra content in these times, a lot of extra video content. You can listen to me and Chad and Scott go through the Decalogue. We're doing that right now. Those videos come out a couple times a week, and we're just going bit by bit. I think it'll probably end up being 11 or so videos total. So go give that a watch if you haven't checked it out already. Chad, you still holding it down?
I'm still holding it down. Yeah. I mean, it's like everybody else. I wake up every day. I'm like, what is today? Yeah. No idea what day of the month it is. I know we're in April. Besides that, yeah, I'm pretty much lost.
Yeah. So. Well, we have, the people don't know, but we have objective evidence that that's the case for me. Guys, before we got on here, Chad texted me like, we doing this? And I thought it was a different day than it was. We do this in the morning. So, I mean, I don't think I would have made it too much longer, but I made it an hour, believing it was a different day than it was.
Yeah, that's the way it goes these days. I saw a meme the other day, said something like, I think I'll sleep on the couch tonight. It'll shorten my commute. Work your way from the bedroom to the living room.
That's right.
Yeah. And I work in my we have an enclosed garage. That's my study. So it's about a, 15-yard commute for me every day from the bedroom to back here where I work. That's it.
That's it.
Go,
man.
For a walk, go for a run, go to the backyard. That's my life.
I saw somebody say when this is all over, they're going to have to get new couches because they've worn them out.
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Spent 10 years worth of time on the couch.
There you go. If you have any extra money, put it, invest in furniture companies, right? Everybody's going to be buying up couches.
Yeah, they're just tired of looking at them, too. They're like, I hate this couch.
Yeah, let's get rid of it. New couch, new look.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, we are. Samson's thinking about buying couches and a house and, filling out a wedding registry and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Something has looked good in his eyes. That's where we left him.
Mr. Romance. Yeah. He's quite the Romeo. So we're in Judges 14, second chapter of the Samson saga. So yeah, this is quite the story. You know, I was thinking this morning, too, going over this and the next chapter, some stuff coming up. There's several things I had never seen before that I'll bring out in the podcast. But have you ever noticed how many animals pop up in the Samson story?
Yeah, a lot,
thinking,
right?
About this morning. Yeah, I was like, it's kind of weird. It's never hit me before. Like, in a little bit, he's going to bring a goat to his wife. And then we got a lion. We got bees. We got the donkey jawbone coming up, right? And got the foxes. I mean, I'm just counting. That's just five animals right there.
Yeah.
Just in the Samson story. So I don't know if there's something to that or if it's just a coincidence. But anyway, it is one of the distinguishing features of this particular part of Judges.
Yeah, he doesn't raise up an army. He just uses nature. He just gets nature on his side.
It's like creative guerrilla warfare that Samson is engaged in. But right now, anyway, he's got his eyes on this Philistine girl, which, as you said, looks right in his eyes, whatever that meant. You know, if something seems right in Samson's eyes, it's a little bit dubious as to exactly what we're looking at, because Samson kind of has a different perspective on things. But anyway, whatever Samson was looking for, I guess whatever his type was, well, this was it. So some translations, I pointed this out last time, say she looks good to me. And I really wouldn't have translated it that way. She's right in my eyes, because that actually fits with what we see elsewhere in Judges. where everyone did what was right in their own eyes in this particular time period. But anyway, he was out and about, and he went to a place called Timnah, which is a Philistine town, saw this girl. She looked right in his eyes. And he goes back home, and he's like, hey, Dad, found my wife. Get her for me, because she's right in my eyes. And his parents aren't too happy about that, because they wanted him to marry somebody from the family, or at least the extended family of the Israelites. But this is the girl he wants, so this is the girl he's going to get. At least that's what he thinks. And then we end it with verse 4 of Judges 14, where it says that his mom and dad didn't know, and neither did we until this happened, didn't know that this whole thing was part of God's plan. This was literally of the Lord. So, I mean, this is one of these cases where, and of course, this is all over the scriptures. I mean, this is like part of daily life too. You got two realities that are kind of intermingled, right? You've got people, not just Samson, but people just in general, doing all sorts of crazy, bad, kind of in between sort of things. We're a little bit gray areas. They're doing all this sort of stuff. And then there's God, who of course is pure and holy, and he's somehow kind of manipulating, working things behind the scenes through his providential guidance of history. And in this case, he's using Samson and this situation that's going to develop relative to his family and his bride to be in order to stir up trouble. I mean, God really is. He's wanting there to be trouble between the Israelites and the Philistines, because the Israelites have basically just accepted the status quo. I mean, it's like they've forgotten everything that God told them about their need to conquer this land and drive out the inhabitants and take possession of what God has given to them. And they're just fine. All right, well, the Philistines are ruling over us. Okay, well, we'll just try not to stir the pot. You know, we'll just kind of keep everything the way it is. We'll see that in the next chapter, chapter 15, where the Israelites are like saying to Samson, man, don't cause any problems. The Philistines are ruling over us, and we're just going to kind of keep things the way they are. But God's like, nope, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in all that. And that monkey wrench is named Samson. He's going to mess things up with this kind of accepted equilibrium between Israel and the Philistines. So let's see what happens. Well, verse 5 says that Samson went down to Timnah with his parents, and they came to some vineyards, which I guess were just maybe on the outskirts of the village. Don't really know exactly where they're located. But all of a sudden, this lion came roaring toward him. When we hear the English word roar, we usually think of lions, right? So I thought, well, maybe this is kind of an ambiguous Hebrew word. I looked it up. No, it's pretty much not in every case, but almost every case it's used in the Old Testament, it's referring to a lion's roar. So this lion comes roaring toward him. And I was curious too, like, you know, are there still lions in Israel? So evidently not many, or if there are any, they're an endangered species. So chances are, at least from my reading, this probably would have been what are called Asiatic lions, which evidently at one time, and we have evidence from Greek and Latin writers that kind of talk about the wildlife in this particular region. Evidently, at one point, the Asiatic lion was all over the place. I mean, it just covered the Holy Land. If you kind of can picture the wall carvings from the palaces in Babylon that the Assyrians would have, they'd have lions that are engraved in the walls. Those would have been Asiatic lions too. So, man, it must have been, you know, pretty common at this time for there to be lions. And we have evidence of other biblical stories where people either killed lions or actually were killed by lions. So Samson kills a lion. David talks about fighting lions, remember, to protect his flock. And one of his men named Benaiah, must have been like this wild, crazy story that everybody just like, you can make reference to it, and everybody knew you were talking about it, because it says something like he killed a lion in a pit on a snowy day. Mm-hmm. It's like, we want to know more. You got video of that? I want to watch that. But anyway, these guys kill lions, but there's also was a prophet that was killed by a lion. And when the Assyrians brought in inhabitants to the northern kingdom after the deportation, it says that God sent lions and killed some of the people there. So I say all that to make the point that at this particular time, I mean, seeing a lion in Israel is probably not that unusual. And this one goes after Samson.
Well, it's funny that you brought up the lion in the pit. There's a book that's not very good, and so I'm not saying read the book. It's an entire book about, you know, faith and manhood based on kind of that one story, which is like 5 seconds long.
Yeah.
Right. But I'll give the author props for like one of the cooler titles ever. It's just called In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. And you're like,
oh, really?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's a pretty good title. Yeah, that is a pretty good title. Yeah, well, that's where he gets it. It's like kind of a throwaway line in 2 Samuel 23. But besides that, yeah, we don't know. I guess he got creative. He wrote a whole book about it. Anyway, so this lion comes roaring toward him and says the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, which is probably too weak of a translation. I mean, this is sort of like he rushed upon him or something like that. I don't know what the ESV says. It just says came roaring toward. Oh, the Spirit rushed upon him. Yeah, that's a better translation. So rushed upon him. So it's not like he floated down like a dove. This is more like take possession of Samson. Came upon him mightily, and he tore the lion as one tears a kid, a baby goat, though he had nothing in his hand. And he didn't tell his mom or his dad what he had done. Pretty impressive. That's some strength there. Even though I'm thinking, it's got to be pretty hard to tear a baby goat. Not that I've ever tried it, but the analogy is not the analogy that we would have used. We might have said as one tears a piece of paper or something like that. But that's what Samson did. So this is, of course, the first evidence that we have of Samson's strength. The first chapter was all about the prophecy of his upcoming conception and birth, and then the story of that and the naming of him. And then the first thing that we're told about him is that he finds this woman. So this is the first of Samson's great feats of strength, which, of course, as we mentioned earlier, is not owing to any kind of like muscular superiority, but this is all about the Spirit of God working through him to accomplish these great things. So he just keeps this to himself, doesn't tell his parents. They go down, they talk to the woman. I don't know if Samson ever even talked to her, but anyway, they talked to her and she looked right in his eyes. So some time passes and he goes back later and to get ready for the wedding. And it says, I guess he remembered, you know, I'm gonna go check out this lion. And so as he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion, and strange thing had happened. There was a swarm of bees and honey inside the body of the lion. So he scrapes out some of it and he goes along eating it, and he gets to his parents and he gives them some of it and they eat it, but he didn't tell them that he had scraped the honey out of the body of the lion. Now, there's a couple of things that I think are worthy of comment here. One is that, now I'm no bee expert. Maybe some of our listeners are bee experts.
I mean,
I don't think that bees usually build hives inside carcasses. I could be wrong there. Somebody can correct me if I'm mistaken there. But that's a little strange. I mean, bees can swarm in all sorts of crazy places. I'm friends with a couple of guys that will, they're bee removal experts. In fact, we had a swarm of bees that built a hive inside under the eaves of our house 2 or 3 years ago. And I watched those guys work getting all the honey out, getting the bees out. And we've got his Facebook friend who does that. And they'll post pictures. I mean, when they're swarming, they'll just kind of mass in all sorts of places. Could be on I've seen them on a spare tire. They'll be anywhere, really. In a tree, on a car, you name it. But I'm not familiar with anything happening inside the carcass of a dead animal. But that's what happens here. So that's the one thing that's kind of strange. maybe there's some message there that I'm missing. But one thing that is important to bear in mind about this is that Samson just broke his Nazirite vow.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing I think we need to take away from this is one of the requirements of someone who's a Nazirite is you can't have any contact with dead things. Even if, say, you have to take the Nazirite vow, your dad gets sick, he dies, there's a funeral, you can't have any contact with the corpse because that would defile you and the Nazirite cannot be defiled. So this would have been, this is the first example of many, as we shall see, where Samson, although he is a Nazirite, does not remain faithful to the vows that he took.
Yeah, and I mean, this is sort of all alluded to in the fact that he doesn't tell them where it came from, right? So he doesn't tell them, killed this lion, went back, checked on it, found some honey inside of it, like, because, and also, just practically speaking, you're like, wait, you got this honey out of a dead animal body? Like,
yeah, like honey. Not something you want to be eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I guess I should point out, I mean, he just defiled his parents too. I mean, because, you know, they're coming to contact with death as well. This was just part of the Israelite ritual system. If you came into contact with something that was dead, then you had to go through certain processes of cleansing. Well, he just kind of brought his parents under this same umbrella of uncleanness as well and didn't tell them about it.
It does, yeah, it does kind of tell you something about Samson too, like that he is a weird guy. He's very strange. I mean, okay, first, obviously it's obviously abnormal to kill a lion with your bare hands. That's one thing, but maybe if you could, you would.
Right.
But you're a different kind of weird guy if you're like scraping honey out of carcasses and just you're like walking along, like, oh yeah, like scrape some out with your hand.
Get a palm full of this.
Eat it. Yeah, that's he's a different kind of guy.
Yeah, he's a whole new level of weird. That's for sure. And as we'll see in just a minute, he's. There's a certain intelligence to him too. I mean, he's not kind of just like a dumb ox, you know. I mean, he's good with words. He has these riddles, and there's a couple occasions where he comes up with little rhymes. And when he's like after a victory, he comes up with these little rhymes to name a place. So, yeah, he's a unique character. You can't like put him in a box. He's a whole new kind of individual.
Yeah, even the stuff later on with Delilah when she's pressing him hard to tell him where the secret, you know, where's the secret of your strength, he comes up with interesting explanations.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's really a trickster in many ways. So he's unique. Anyway, they go on eating their honey, and they. It says his father went down to where the woman was at, and Samson makes a feast there. And I guess that was the custom in those days. Now, it's a little bit, I don't want to say this. There's a suggestion in the word feast that this isn't just like a meal, because the Hebrew word for feast is actually formed from the verb to drink. So just like we've seen this before. I think I pointed out before that the word for a symposium, it actually comes from the Greek word drinking together. Well, the Hebrew is kind of like this too. I mean, presumably, yeah, there would be feasting, but I don't know that feast is the best word to use here to translate it, because it's more directly formed from the verb to drink. So a drinking feast, if you will, big party. Well, if Samson is drinking now, right. Well, he's just broken the second of his Nazirite vows, because of course he's not to consume any alcoholic beverage, but anything from the vine. But that's what he did. So he's two strikes against him so far. So they make this feast, and verse 11 says, when they saw him, they took 30 companions to be with him. There's the Greek translation changes this a little bit. So in Hebrew, the word for see and the word for fear are very similar in appearance, just a letter difference between the two. So they'd be easily confused. Now, the Greek translation says that it came about that they feared him And so they brought 30 companions to be with him, which, who knows, that might be the case too. So the, do they see him or do they fear him? Whatever it was, it seems to suggest that they're like, we better get some guys around Samson because he seems a little bit hazardous to us. So they bring in these 30 guys who are his wedding guests, I suppose. And then Samson, this is where he gets a little cocky. So he says, you know, unprovoked, he just comes up with this riddle. He says, let me propound a riddle to you. And if you can solve it during the 7 days of the feast, then I'm going to give you a whole wardrobe, right? I'll give you 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes, whatever exactly that looked like in that particular culture. But if you can't solve the riddle, then you're going to have to give me 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. And they're like, all right, we're game. Let us know the riddle. So he comes up with this riddle, famous riddle. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. And it rhymes in English, and it's very poetic in the Hebrew as well. But that's it. If somebody, if I didn't know, of course, anything about this story, and somebody told me this riddle, it's pretty vague, right?
I think riddle is it's a generous term for this, but a riddle is something that you could presumably figure out. This is just like, without knowing anything, mm-hmm. there's no way to solve this.
No, yeah. Which Samson probably realized, right? Yeah, so I'm thinking these guys, right away, as soon as they heard the riddle, we were like, oh man, we should never have agreed to this this challenge because there's no way we're going to be able to solve this. And they couldn't. It's 3 days go on. This is a long wedding feast, by the way. I mean, I guess some cultures do that. I would not want to be a Philistine dad, be paying for 7 days of a wedding party. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, this happens in the Old Testament a lot, man. Like there's a,
I mean, they know how to party.
These things go on for a while.
Yeah, they know how to party. It's not a party, of course, but the ordination, I mean, that goes on for several days when the priest ordained. Now they got a week-long wedding party. So they knew how to tie one on back then. Well, 3 days go by, and these guys can't solve it. So the fourth day, they're like, all right, we gotta up our ante here. So they go to his wife. And we're not sure, by the way, how this worked with at the consummation of the marriage. Like, was the first night the wedding night? So they were actually together. Marriage was consummated. And then they just party the rest of the time, kind of like a honeymoon period. Or do they have 6 days of the party? And then the seventh day was the consummation of the marriage. Who knows? I mean, we can't really tell from the word for wife, because in the Hebrew, when you were engaged, you were often called a man's wife. So anyway, whatever the situation was between the two of them, they go to her and they say, to entice or seduce your husband. So this is the same word that's going to be used in the Delilah story. So obviously the author is wanting us to kind of read these two stories together, because of course they're very similar. In both cases, people want to find out something about Samson, and so they go to the woman that's with him, in this case his bride, and in the latter case his lover, Delilah, and they're like, entice or seduce your husband or seduce Samson so that he can tell us the riddle. But they don't stop there. They're like, or if you don't want to do that, we'll burn you and your father's house with fire. These guys are serious.
Escalated quickly.
That escalated very quickly. So Samson's wife, she tries the tear trick. She weeps before him and says, well, not just the tears, but she says, you only hate me. And you do not love me. You have propounded a riddle to the sons of my people and haven't told it to me. And Samson's response is just so Samson-like. He's like, look, I haven't even told it to my father and mother. So why should I tell you? Now, guys, if if you're listening to the podcast and the little, you know, relationship advice. Well, here's a little relationship advice. Don't say something like this to your bride. a good start to a marriage.
You're telling me that if Stacy's like, listen, you haven't told me about this thing that you're doing. And you're like, yeah, well, I haven't told my mom or dad either. Yeah, that's not gonna work.
I know, I'll be sleeping at night. The dog and I'll be together. Yeah, that's Samson. He must not have taken Genesis 2 to heart, right? About leaving your father and your mother and cleaving to your wife. So he doesn't tell her. And she keeps this up, says she wept before him, long as the feast lasted, all 7 days. And it says it came about on the seventh day that he told her because she pressed him so hard. Again, this is the same verb that is used in chapter 16 in the story of Delilah. So the verb for entice or seduce is used in both stories. And the verb for pressing him hard is also used in both stories. So, you know, obviously we're supposed to read these two together. So in this case, he finally tells a riddle to her, and then she passes it on. And so on the last day, right before the sun goes down, the men come. And it's kind of strange the way they solve it, because they don't really like their answers are questions.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they'll like come right out and say, oh yeah, yeah. Well, the eater is a lion and what is sweet is honey. That is, they ask two questions. They say, well, what is sweeter than honey and what's stronger than a lion? And then Samson's response, again, guys, relationship advice. I don't think I really need to tell you this one, but if you want to choose, a nickname for your bride, don't call her a cow.
Yeah. Heifer is not the one.
Heifer is not the one. I mean, I don't know what you want to call her, but do not call her an eglah, a heifer. This, I know that Hebrew is kind of creative sometimes with animal names, but this would have been received by a woman during that time in the exact same way that it would be received today if you start calling your wife or your girlfriend a heifer. Not a good name. This, by the way, is so it's eglah, which is the feminine form of the same word that we saw used back in the story of our fat king Eglon, remember? So Eglon, his name sounds like the Hebrew word for a bull or a steer. So anyway, if you had not plowed my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. So I don't, Samson. Any chance of this marriage going well, it's just not looking good. Not looking good at this point. Well, what happens next? Well, I guess to Samson's credit, he does actually, I mean, he follows through, right? He's not going to go down to like Kohl's or somewhere and buy 30 changes of clothing for these guys. He's got a much better method for doing it. The Spirit of the Lord rushes upon him, same verb again. And so he goes down to another city, another Philistine city. So there was a Pentapolis, a kind of a unit of five cities of the Philistines. So Ashkelon is one. Ashdod, Ekron, Gaza, and Gath. That's the Philistine Pentapolis. So it goes about 20 miles away from Timnah. It goes about 20 miles away down to Ashkelon, which is a coastal city on the Mediterranean. And rather than go shopping, he just like takes out 30 guys and strips them and then goes back and hands out the clothes to these 30 wedding companions of his. And it says, his anger burned, and then he just leaves. So he brings them. I kind of picture him like showing up. He's got all this clothes like in his arms. He like throws it to the guys, and then he storms off and goes back to his father's house.
Well, dude, it seems to me like what he does, I might be reading into this a little bit, but if you go and then you go kill 30 guys, then you strip them, you take their clothes, and then you go give those clothes to somebody else. Like, in my mind, what this is he goes, he kills these guys. He doesn't poison them. He doesn't, like, I mean, he goes and he, like, murders these dudes. And then he gives them his clothes. And I feel like what's happening here is he's got just probably clothes covered in blood. And, like, they're just probably,
yeah, I don't know how they would be.
Yeah, just bloody clothes. And he's just like, here you go. And, like, they're just, I mean, it's like the freakiest thing ever when someone's like, all right, you figured out my riddle, but I don't think you played fair. And so I just want to, like, give you this warning. And, like, here's 30 changes of clothes, but they're all bloodstained and, like, torn or whatever. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, how can he kill this many guys without getting some blood on the clothes?
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen. Yeah. No matter what he used to kill them, he didn't, like, strangle 30 guys.
No, so,
there's going to be blood on these clothes.
And I would think it would be intentional. Like, he probably wanted it as bloody as possible. Like, I feel like he's making a statement here.
Yeah, he's definitely making a statement. So after all this, this climactic scene, it said, this is the way the chapter ends. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, or some translations say his best man, who had been his best man. I mean, what an ending to the story.
Yeah.
7 days, they had this feast and the riddle and the whole killing of the guys. And then at the end of it all, he storms off and the bride's father's like, oh, well, I guess he doesn't want you for his wife. Hey, you, come over here. You want to marry the girl instead? I mean, this father is eager to marry off his daughter, evidently. What happens.
I wonder if this might have been the ultimate mom saying "I told you so" when he got back from this whole ordeal.
Yeah, probably so. If we told you, you should have married one of your cousins. Yeah, this is what happens. This is such an interesting story. It's so entertaining. So anyway, that wraps up chapter 14. But chapter 15 is just kind of going right from this, because we're not finished yet with this particular part of Samson's life. So a little, I guess he cools off, right? Some time goes by. We don't know how long, but it's been a while. We know it's wheat harvest, which was probably May, springtime anyway. It usually fell around the Israelite festival of Pentecost. So he goes back, and this time, like a true Romeo, he brings his wife not a box of chocolates, not a dozen roses, but what every girl wants, a baby goat.
Yeah.
Yeah, more relationship advice. Next time Valentine's Day rolls around, forget the roses, get the chocolates, just bring your wife a baby goat. And so he's got this baby goat, and kind of picturing it, he's holding it in one hand, and then he knocks on the door, and he's talking to her dad, and he says, I will go into my wife in her room. Now, the Hebrew here is a little bit iffy, but I'm assuming what he means. Usually when the Hebrew talks about going in, it's talking about sexual intercourse. And she's inside. But, of course, Samson has no idea that after he stormed off in anger, that his bride is actually now someone else's bride. So her dad's response is this. Now, in the Hebrew, it would read something like this. I really thought that you really hated her. So what the Hebrew will do when it wants to intensify something, it uses the same verb twice. And the second form, it's called an infinitive absolute. So like repeat the verb. So it'd be something like, I don't know how I would say it in English. I thoughtingly thought that you hatingly hated her. It was something like that anyway. That's the way that the Hebrew will bring this out. I think probably also what's hinted at here is that not just the emotion of hate, but judging by some other uses of hate that we have in the Old Testament, that he's saying, I basically thought that you had divorced her. Not that you just hated her, but that you were done, that you were walking away from what would have been a marriage, or what at least technically was considered marriage. It was an engagement of sorts. So I thought that this was the case. I thought you hated her. I thought that you hated / divorced her. So I gave it to your companion. And then never wanted to miss an opportunity. And probably also after seeing all those bloody clothes, also wanting to kind of pacify Samson, he's like, hey, but I got an idea. I got a younger sister. She has a younger sister, my younger daughter, and she's better looking than the bride that you wanted. So let her be yours instead. Well, evidently she was not, the younger sister was evidently not right in the eyes of Samson, because he wanted nothing to do with her. Instead, he decides that he's angry again. So he's going to take out his anger this time on the Philistines in a different sort of way. And he says, this time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means like the first time he thought he was not blameless.
Well, I mean, it seems like he's like, well, if I go kill these guys, that's on me. But if I set something else up and they, you know, some people, I mean, I don't know. Because if you read as this continues, if you read what he's about to do, like, I don't know if you're blameless, man.
Yeah, blameless might be a bit of a stretch of that particular word. But his plan for doing this, I mean, you got to give marks to Samson Freak for creativity.
He must have just had some like anger that he had to get out. Like, he's like, I'm so raging right now that I'm going to have to go get this energy out. Because
no idea.
Because what he's about to do seems difficult.
Yeah, yeah, extremely difficult. So rather than just like going around torching Philistines fields, he catches 300 foxes.
That's ridiculous. Like, I mean,
I have no idea.
This is one of those feats that he does where you're like, okay, being like crazy strong doesn't help you here. Like, how are you going to catch 300 foxes?
Yeah, no idea. I mean, I wish I knew, because this is a great mystery.
Just setting up traps everywhere, I guess.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was a trapper when I was in high school growing up. And I mean, I was lucky to catch a few coyotes and bobcats every year. 300 alive. I mean, I don't know how he did it, but anyway, that's the story. He catches 300 foxes. Could be jackals. The Hebrew word's the same. So foxes are jackals. And he takes two foxes and he ties their tails together somehow. And then he puts a torch between these two tails. And then he sets fire to the torch, and then he released the foxes by the grain fields of the Philistines. And I guess the reason he did that, I mean, I've never tied two dogs' tails together, but I'm assuming that when you do that, they don't like running a straight line, because right. They're like, you know, they're kind of circles or kind of zigzagging. And so they're going to be going all over the place. And when they do, of course, this is what Samson wants. They're setting fire to everything, not just the grain fields, but to, the vineyards and to the standing grain, what they'd already harvested. So there's fire everywhere. So he's basically destroying their economy is one way to look at this. By the way, fun fact I learned this morning. I don't know if this is behind this or not, but there is a Greek word. It's lampouros, formed from two words, like lamp, like lamp, light, bright. That's the one of it, one word. And the other word is tail. So the Greeks had a word that basically meant fire tail, and it was a nickname they gave to foxes.
Yeah.
And now the Philistines came from the Aegean, which was a Greek-speaking area. So I can't help but wonder, like, if Samson, like, is making sort of a pun on this. Oh, so you call foxes fire tails. I'll show you fire tails. Anyway, little fun fact from the Greek.
But he's blameless in this whole thing, of course.
But he's totally blameless in all this. So just to kind of wrap up this particular part of the story, the Philistines say, who did this? And somebody found out. They said it was Samson. Not just Samson, but the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion. Now, this makes no sense to me. Like, why would the Philistines want to take their vengeance out on Samson's would-be father-in-law and his almost bride? But that's what they do. They came up and they burned her and her father with fire. So this is one of those sad ironies. The reason she pressed Samson so much is because, of course, the 30 companions of Samson threatened to burn her. And once she finally found out the riddle and gave it to him, then everything kind of comes around. And in the end, the very thing that she feared the most is what happened to her. Not a very happy ending to this story.
No. This is an interesting thing that he says here as he ends, right? Is that if this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you. And after that, I will quit.
Yeah, famous last words. Yeah, it's kind of a leading expression, right? After that, I will quit. Well, don't worry if you don't know the story. There's more to it because he's not going to quit. He's got a whole lot more tricks up his sleeve after this. We have to get to we got a donkey jawbone coming up. We got another little poetic expression of Samson. And then we have a lot more. I mean, he's going to visit a prostitute in Gaza. He's going to fall in love with Delilah. A lot more to the story.
A lot more going on. Well, all right. That's where we'll leave it this week, guys. If you want to do us a favor during quarantine, you're sitting around thinking, what should I do with all this time? Well, probably you should go rate and review the podcast. I mean, there's 3 minutes that you could fill. So you go over to iTunes, rate and review, 5-star review, say a couple nice words. Makes the podcast more visible when people are searching for things. So helps us out. All right, Chad, I will see you next week.
We'll be here. See you then.